Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about New Scientist from the 4th of August 2018, an article by Douglas Heaven called Robot Laws. Now, you'll probably hear me breathing a little bit as I'm just going to walk up to the next village in the Blue Mountains to have my blood tested. It's part of the stuff of having artificial implants in. You have to have blood thinners and have your blood tested all the time. So it's robot laws. What rules should machines follow when they interact with us? Asked Douglas Heavens. The car's computer saw Elaine Hertzberg pushing her bicycle across the highway a full 6 seconds before it struck her. It was travelling just under 70 kilometres per hour. It had more than enough time to stop or swerve, but it did neither, hitting her head-on. Hertzberg died in hospital, the first pedestrian to be killed by an autonomous vehicle. The preliminary investigation by the US National Transport Safety Board into the collision, which happened in Tempe, Arizona in March, found that the emergency brakes of the Uber-operated car was designed to be disabled when driving autonomously to ensure a smoother ride. It was also not designed to alert the human operator of danger. That sounds amazing, doesn't it? We are a far cry from Isaac Asimov's first law of robotics. A robot may not injure a human or, through inaction, allow a human to become to harm. Of course, Asimov's laws are fictional. They are also 75 years old. But the ideas of rigid rules that keep wayward robots from in check has stuck around in popular imagination. Today we find ourselves in a world fast filling with robots. As we walk across, they are driving our cars, performing our medical procedures, influencing our elections, and threatening to take our jobs. It's obviously we can't live without them, but the deeper question is how we live with them remains unanswered. The past couple of years have seen a slew of reports from government that think tanks offering policy recommendations, but so far Asimov's model of neat, self-contained commandments remains fantasy. How do we change that? Matthew Devax, a member of the European Parliament in Luxembourg and author of an EU report on the laws of robotics, compares present situation to when cars first started to appear on roads. Quote, the first drivers had no rules, she says. They did as they thought sensible or prudent. But as technology spreads, society needs rules. The trouble is, robotic intervention into human affairs is going to require something far more comprehensive than the highway code. Legislation that protects passengers and pedestrians from driver's class, for example, will power us to stop data scraping algorithms from influencing our votes. Medical robots programmed to diagnose and treat people will need different regulations from those sent onto the battlefield. Quote, AI is not a single thing that can be regulated, says Stephen Croft of the Bishop of Oxford, who sits in the UK House of Lords Select Committee on Artificial Intelligence. Quote, there are different risks and different physical and emotional dangers. Code of conduct. There is another hurdle to interpreting rules requiring common sense. It's not clear how you would encode even Asimov's clear-cut commandments in a way that could, that a machine could be trusted to follow. Says Ulrich Frobisch, the University of Koblenz in Germany, who works on automated reasoning. He knows it's difficult because he tried, quote, I gave up. It's too much. It was much too difficult, he says. The trouble is that the laws are too general and don't allow for context for Asimov. This is probably part of the point. Many of his stories explore the unintentional consequences of robots trying to apply the laws in different scenarios. In Runaround, a 1942 story in which they first appeared in print, a robot which gets stuck in a loop when it tries to satisfy the second law, obey the orders given to it by humans, and the third law, protect its own existence at the same time. Quote, Asimov's laws are perfect for novels, but not for putting into practice, says Delavaux. Ultimately, the debate boils down into the question of ethics rather than technology. What values do we as a society continue to be worth protecting? Croft stresses the need to avoid the, quote, philosophy of extreme libertarianism of places like Silicon Valley. Or the totalitarian approach employed by countries like China. Quote, the new power that AI brings needs a new kind of ethic. I couldn't agree more, he says. He didn't say that, I said that. It's going to be vital for the sake of... I've just come up a hill so I can breathe a little bit better. It's not a very big hill, it's just, you know, you wouldn't even notice it. But I'll get there. You're like, I feel a billion times better, but I'm still going. It's going to be vital for the sake of human flourishing that this is shaped by society rather than shaping society. It's in the interest of individuals not to allow private companies to set the agenda. As Croft remarks, highlights, different places have different cultures, and different cultures have different laws. Japan is much more comfortable with the idea of companion robots than many countries. For example, okay. For example, as shown by the recent fuss over GDPR, whatever that stands for, Europe has different attitudes towards the privacy and the data collection than the US. Nonetheless, there are surely some guidelines that everyone might be willing to sign on. Not allowing robots to harm humans seems like a no-brainer. A UN ban on autonomous weapons has widespread support, for example, but some argue that letting robots kill might actually save lives by reducing the number of lethal mistakes made by human soldiers. Oh, yuck. A similar argument is used to justify the occasional fatal accident with drivers, cars and medical robots. We cannot cut the risks of harm to zero, but humans are far safer with machines than they are with one another. Many find such utilitarian reason unpalatable, however, quote, taking the life in war can only be justified in the most extreme circumstances. This is Croft. Humans, judgment is therefore a very important part of the regrettable waging of war. Anything that moves away from that is ultimately dehumanizing. Whatever robots have the capacity to inflict harm, therefore, the operating theatre or the battlefield or on the road, human oversight is essential. One scenario often invoked to show the dangers of letting AI decide itself is the so-called trolley problem, in which a driverless car must choose to kill in the event of an accident is certain to be fatal to either the car's occupants or the pedestrians, depending on its action. But Ryan Callow of the University of Washington, Seattle, finds the thought experiment ridiculous. It's an odd assumption to make that a robot has no choice but to kill, said Vivek. Now he asked me about the trolley problem, then took my drive when I took the driving test. More interestingly, are the new possibilities that technology brings about. Here is one scenario suggested by Carlo. Imagine an autonomous car with a hybrid motor that can charge its battery or running a petrol engine. One of its goals might be to maximise the fuel efficiency. After a few days on the road, it learns that it is more efficient if it starts out each morning with a fully charged battery and decides to run its engine in the garage overnight, killing everyone in the household through carbon monoxide poisoning. This will be a clear violation of any do no harm to humans law, but one that's hard to foresee. In such cases, how do we work out what went wrong and who's to blame? Quote, there will be accidents, says Rebecca Croft of Yale University. The question is, will we let them fall where it lands, or will we figure out how to appropriate entities accountable to ensure the victims are compensated? DeVos believes that the responsibility for robots lies with the manufacturers. Quote, if you put something on the market, you should be liable for it, quote, she says. Croft agrees, quote, responsibility extends to the things you create, he says. To manage liability, DeVos suggests that robots should be given an e-personality that would act as a handle on a group, the group of people behind it. It's much the same way as companies are treated as individuals under the law to ensure collective responsibility for their actions. A corporation of humans behind it, she says, it's the same for a robot. The trouble is that the liability law typically requires defendants to have foreseen the outcomes of their actions. But with artificial intelligence software that learns, this may not be reasonable. As Carlo's battery charging scenario, to avoid such unpredictable behaviour for even ever-rising, one German commission has suggested that there should be no self-learning components in driverless cars, says Fubich, which is silly. You want it to be able to improve. What we can ask for instead is that robots are able to explain itself. The AI is starting to be used to predict our fitness for a job, or the likelihood that we will commit a crime, for example. Decisions we should have the right to question. The AI Now Institute, a cross-disciplinary research centre at the New York University, recommends organisations involved in high-stakes domains like welfare, criminal justice, healthcare, education should no longer use a black box system whose algorithms cannot be scrutinised. Ensuring the responsible use of algorithms may mean we need a new hybrid approach to AI. When I say education does operate on a black box system, it doesn't use AI, but there is this black box that no one actually knows or is told is allowed to know how things operate. Where machine learning software is combined with techniques that are more easy for humans to understand. This is an exciting new research area, says Verbich. For Anne Marie Infedon, a trustee of the Institute for Future Work in Palo Alto, California, if you want AI to provide maximum benefit and least harm, the key is not just to make machines understandable to humans, but to make them better than we could be. Her answer is to make machines don't share obsessions with categorization things. That may avoid some bias that creeps in our AI and skews your automated decision making. When we train software, it typically asks it to label things. Is this a dog or a cat? But once you lump something into a category, black male, age 18 to 25, woman over 65, a lot of assumptions come into play that may not be relevant for the task at hand. Imafedon cites Nextcloud, for example, a credit of categorization done well. Okay, just crossing the road here. If you go to the cinema to see a film soon after its release, sometimes you'll get asked what you thought of it. Your response is then dumped into those of your demographic, women this age, those of your demographic, women this age like this film, for example. But Netflix tailors its recommendations to individual people who liked this film also liked that one. Your gender and age has nothing to do with it. G'day, mate. Getting machines to treat people more as individuals is almost the important principle we should aim for, says Infodom. Yet such laws could easily infringe privacy. You bet. That is collecting individual information of a person. Okay. Watching our every move and learning our every preference before using that data to make a profile that gets used against us. AI-assisted profiling is already exacerbating big problems in society, such as the Russian agents using Facebook algorithms to see the social network with tailor-made propaganda. Perhaps we should see more advantages if we had some guarantee the data was used in an unbiased way. If we can overcome these challenges, machines that save lives, account for their actions and treat us all fairly will be welcomed by most societies. But as we become capable of creating AI and robots which are more and more human-like, we must consider the kind of interactions we're comfortable having with the machines. Voice recognition technologies let us talk to devices more or less naturally. Google's Duplex software lets AI-controlled virtual assistants book appointments over the phone using synthetic voice that is realistic enough to make the person on the other end of the line think they are talking to another human. And robots are crafting humanoid robots that are life like flesh and hair. The uncanny certainly, but there is a big concern here. Humans form emotional attachments easily. We have barely begun to consider the type of emotional relationships we might have with human-like companion robots, for example. Cultural differences may come into play. Quote, in Japan, robots caring for the elderly is completely acceptable, says Fulach. In Germany, it's considered inhuman. But we can probably all agree that however like a machine appears to be, we would always be able to tell whether we, in fact, interacting with a machine or a human. Quote, we can't prevent manufacturers from putting human-like robots on the market because consumers will buy them, says Durox. But we should make people aware that if they interact with a robot, that it's not human. In other settings, even robots don't look particularly like us, but they might still be able to take our place. Quote, robots could be liberating force by taking away routine work, says Tom Watson, deputy leader of the UK's Labour Party, who set up a future work commission last year to look at the new technologies will affect employment. He is, however, concerned about imbalance in power between those calling the robots shots and the rest of us. Quote, we've got to be careful that this big corporations, employers don't amass all the benefits and employers don't amass all the benefits while the ordinary workers are left to lump the negatives, he says. So it's just a bit of wind blowing its page as I walk. See if I can hold it a bit better. In our increasingly automated world, it is easy to forget that machines are programmed, owned and operated by humans. Like any other invention, their decisions, purpose and functions are all designed with someone higher, all to human goal in mind, safety, comfort, efficiency, profit. Design laws for machines to follow is an entertaining thought experiment, but ultimately a distraction. A real robot laws need to be written to keep people in check, not machines. That's a beautiful idea. This debate for everyone is in the world, says Croft. As human race, we need to assess deep traditions of wisdom to address these fundamental questions. Access. We cannot answer them through technology alone. There is at least one technological fix we might agree on, however. Quote, a human should always be able to shut down a machine, says Delvaux. For me, it's the interesting aspect of it is not necessarily humans, but that what exactly is a machine, and it's a conceptualization of the future. But this is what also our society and relationships are. You marry something. You marry someone. One of the vows, sort of strange vows, is almost a law of robotics, is for whatever the future may hold. And that's essentially what you have to do when you're designing and programming robots. There's the basic line of safety, so the future may hold dangers, so you have to design, automation for safety. It's like robotics and automation, in fact, a whole heap of things, from just a swinging gate with a lock in it, is whatever the future may hold. And you may you will invest an hour getting the gate to automatically latch. G'day, mate. Automatically latch when it's closed. You're spending that time. You could be spending the time otherwise, but you have conceptualized the future in which a degree of automation, just even as simple as putting away a broom in a cupboard after sweeping, it's an investment of time, but it means that when you go and do the task in future, you have done that task with the knowledge of future action. And so that seems to be the basics of robotics. It's just that as you make the devices more and more sophisticated, you have more and more sophisticated outcomes. And really, when you come to think of it, it means that, like all things, like different countries 10 years ago, or 20, 30 years ago, produced everything. Now we tend to produce only very specialist services or very specialist products. China just manufactures everything. Society will be very specialist in what people can do. I'm actually now going downhill now, so it's a little bit easier to breathe. Thanks a lot for listening. Bit ill speaking. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.